It's not easy to do audits in a war zone, but that's the job of my guest Stuart Bowen. As the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction, he oversees the auditing of the reconstruction and investigates American involvement in fraud, waste, bribery, and kickbacks in Iraq. He's based in Washington and is about to make his 10th trip to Iraq. Bowen was also the Inspector General for the Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq. He's worked in the gubernatorial and presidential administrations of George W. Bush. Earlier this week, the Office of the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction, also known as SIGR, released its 7th report to Congress. Bowen says $5 billion of reconstruction money has had to be redirected to security. So one of the reasons why there isn't enough money to complete all the projects that were planned is that we have to spend a lot of money on security because of the insurgency. Are insurgents also blowing up or in other ways destroying projects that have either been completed or been partially completed?
Yes, it's been a continuing problem for over a year. Good example is the Northern Pipeline. We have a couple of inspections that we completed, or three, in this last latest report about that pipeline, but it has been beset with attacks over the last 12 months, and that has naturally impeded both the flow of oil, affected income, the national income for Iraq, and made the cost of reconstruction higher.
Before reconstruction started, before the actual invasion of Iraq, projections were that oil revenues would be able to pay for a lot of the post-war reconstruction. Have there been any oil revenues yet that can help pay for reconstruction?
Yes, there have. I mean, there is a steady pace of oil exporting, but it's been hampered by a number of problems. First, smuggling. The fact that there are substantial subsidies for fuels in Iraq has caused a black market for the illegal smuggling of oil products out of Iraq. Second, the attacks on the pipeline have impeded exports. And although the price of oil has gone up and added revenue to Iraq, the attacks on the pipelines have reduced export. And so essentially the total income in oil for Iraq has remained steady over the last quarter.
Now, your office is investigating theft, corruption, bribery, kickbacks. Can you give us an overview of how that picture looks right now?
Yes. We have made substantial progress over this last quarter on a variety of cases. I can't go into their details because there's a grand jury impaneled, and the information from that grand jury is confidential. But what I can tell you is that we have an organization called the Special Investigative Task Force for Iraq Reconstruction, SPITFIRE, that is composed of Immigration and Customs Enforcement from the Department of Homeland Security, the Internal Revenue Service, the Department of State Inspector General, and the Department of Justice. And in pooling our resources, we have made substantial progress in accumulating evidence on a variety of cases involving fraud and bribery. I expect very soon to be prepared to make some announcements on the specifics about those cases.
Now, is this investigating fraud and bribery on the part of contractors in Iraq? Like, who are you looking at?
Yes, U.S. personnel in Iraq, contractors, and government.
Are there things about Iraq that make it a kind of fertile climate for bribery and corruption and fraud?
Yes, there was. It's a cash environment. There was millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in cash being transferred in Iraq since CPA took over. The Coalition Provisional Authority was in charge of managing the development fund for Iraq. After the war, there was simply no electronic funds transfer capacity. And that means virtually every transaction, all the payment of salaries, the payment of on governmental budgets, was done in cash. And simply having that much cash around, I think, led to some wrongful conduct, and we are charged with identifying those who engaged in criminal conduct and bringing them to justice.
I think there was one business transaction involving $120 million in cash, and 96 million of those dollars actually went missing. How do you track down amounts of cash, like volumes of how do you track down that much cash?
Well, actually, you're referring to our audit of the South Central CPA regional office in Hilla, and that has certainly been a financial disaster zone, if you will. We've done five audits in that area. In that particular audit, we concluded that there was $96 million for which there was inadequate documentation for the use of the funds. Actual lost dollars was $7 million, but we have investigations going on related to that. And in our latest report, we looked at two projects that were supposed to be funded with that money. The Deputy Secretary of Defense said, well, I understand that there was no accountability on this money, but go out and see if we got anything for the dollars that were actually spent, notwithstanding the lack of proper paperwork. And we did. We looked at the Carbala Library, and we looked at the Babylon Police Academy, and they were both severely deficient, failed to meet specifications, and grant dollars and contract dollars were missing.
Now, it was in your July report, you urged the government to withhold almost $90 million in payments to Halliburton because of problems with Halliburton's cost reporting. You said that the cost reporting was so problematic, your office couldn't perform a credible audit. What were the problems you were running into?
Well, it has been a problem that Kellogg Brown and Root had for over a year.
And I should say Kellogg Brown and Root is a subsidiary of Halliburton, and they are the subcontractor to the military to provide certain services like what, food and cleaning?
That's right. They have what's called the log cap contract, and that's to provide life support to the military. We are not looking at those issues. We've been looking at Kellogg Brown and Root for a while, and we've had concerns about them. We've done several audits. We did an audit of how they manage property, both in Baghdad and Kuwait during the Coalition Provisional Authorities period. We've looked at how they managed the task order that provided life support to the Coalition Provisional Authority. And in each of those audits, we found serious deficiencies. The Project and Contracting Office, which is in charge of the oversight of the oil contracts that Kellogg Brown and Root has, also had serious problems with the cost accounting, simply how KBR kept their books and put them under a cure notice last December. And that simply means that they were severely deficient. They needed to bring their cost accounting up to minimum standards, or they were in danger of losing the contract. That cure notice stayed in place until June, when it was finally lifted. During my ninth trip to Baghdad in August, I addressed this issue with the managers at the Project and Contracting Office, and they said that those issues had mostly been resolved, but there were still some other problems with respect to Kellogg Brown and Root.
Are the problems that you're finding with Kellogg Brown and Root pretty standard problems that you might find in a situation like this, or does it seem exceptional to you?
I think this is an extremely difficult environment to operate in, so it's hard to say in a case like this, since this is sui generis. This is a situation of trying to rebuild an oil industry in a war zone. And so that is an obstacle that simply we haven't experienced elsewhere. But nevertheless, I'm concerned that certain required standards of cost reporting and execution are not being met by Kellogg Brown and Root, and that they need to bring their performance up. And it's not just me. It's me visiting with the managers, the U.S. managers at the Project and Contracting Office in Baghdad. They've had these concerns for most of this year as well.
I recently interviewed a reporter from the Chicago Tribune named Cam Simpson, who wrote an investigative series in the Tribune saying that KBR is Kellogg Brown and Root is leaving the hiring of foreign workers in this is mostly unskilled foreign workers to Middle Eastern subcontractors who use fraud and coercion to lure unsuspecting workers to Iraq, and that these workers are sometimes told they're going to work in a swank hotel in Jordan, but instead they end up in Iraq. And several of the workers from Nepal who were executed in Iraq by terrorists were in this position. And also these workers, in order to get the job, have to pay a middleman, a broker, and they end up going deep into debt just to pay the broker to get the job. And then they become the equivalent of an indentured worker. They have to work just to pay back the debt that they have, and they can't leave the job even if they want to. Have you heard anything like this?
Yes, I have, and I addressed it last year with the Defense Contract Management Agency, which is in charge of overseeing Kellogg Brown & Root's operations under the LOGCAP contract. LOGCAP is the life support contract that that the U.S. government issues to support overseas logistics for the military. We had similar complaints come in over our hotline, and I went with my inspectors to meet with the DCMA head and urged him to address them with KBR, and he said he would. We did see some responsiveness, some agreement to change the way of doing business, but I still think that the issue is there, and that more work needs to be done.
My guest is Stuart Bowen, the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Stuart Bowen, the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction. He oversees the auditing of the reconstruction and investigates American involvement in fraud, waste, bribery, and kickbacks in Iraq. What are some of the projects that have been completed and that are functioning in Iraq that you think are making significant improvements in the life of Iraqis?
Good question. We have been out across Iraq, my inspectors have, over the last 6 months visiting projects. And we visited five electrical substations down in Basra, and they are very well constructed. They're not fully integrated into the grid yet, and we identified that problem, and it's being solved. But it's quality workmanship. There's a healthcare facility that we looked at this last quarter that is in good shape. There were some minor problems with the concrete beams, but overall, it's a good project. We've done three inspections of the Al-Fatah pipeline crossing in northern Iraq. And while it's still early in construction, it looks like that integrated oil pipeline system is going to greatly benefit Iraq. And as an example of how SIGR has been able to help program success, our engineers looked at the river crossing tie-in and made a suggestion of a modification that will perhaps increase the flow of oil from that location by over 50%, resulting in millions of dollars in additional revenue for Iraq.
You've made how many trips to Iraq?
I'll be leaving on my 10th trip at the end of this week.
Can you share with us one of the most interesting experiences you've had in Iraq?
Yes. Well, in December, when I was leaving, it's very cold there, and I was sitting in the back of a C-130, strapped into the hanging jump seats. It was night, and we took off around 8 o'clock. And normally when you leave, you spiral out. What that means is that the pilot will corkscrew his ascent in order to avoid any ground fire. Well, we started to go into our corkscrew, and suddenly I realized this was different. He went into a left bank that was pulling at least 2 G's, and suddenly out the rear of the aircraft, I saw this bright light, and I realized he'd fired all of his flares. And I could see out the back window for miles. It was so bright. And I knew that something wrong had happened and that we perhaps had taken a shot. And indeed, when we landed, I talked to the loadmaster, and he confirmed that there had been a discharge of a handheld SAM in our direction, but it had followed the flares. So that, you know, it is a... I've called what we do extreme auditing, because it is a dangerous place to work. And you know, it's not just that experience. It's also been we've had rockets that with some regularity fall in the vicinity of where we work, and that we work right there on the Tigris in the Republican Palace. It's a massive structure filled with Italian marble designs, beautiful artwork, but it is also exposed to rocket attacks. And indeed, in January, a rocket came through the roof and impacted the room immediately adjacent to where my auditors were working, and tragically, two project and contracting office employees were killed.
Has being in this job meant, you know, like losing certain friends, because you have to give the facts, and sometimes the facts don't look that appealing in terms of projects that aren't getting completed, the amount of money that we have to spend on security, insurgents destroying projects that are completed or half completed, and you have to start them all over again. I mean, the news isn't always good news.
Well, you're right. Being an inspector general is not a great way to win friends and influence people, per se. I wouldn't say I've lost friends in the course of this. It's simply carrying out a mission that I've been assigned to do. And as I said when I started this job, that I would let my audits and investigations speak for themselves, and we would tell the good and the bad news just as we found it, and that's what we've done. And there's been a lot of both. And I think as we move in then to the next phase of supporting Iraqis as they rebuild the rest of their infrastructure, that we can look for a continuation of the steady progress that I've begun to see over the last two quarters.
When reconstruction efforts were projected, I don't think anyone thought that the reconstruction would be taking place while Iraq was still a war zone, while there was a powerful insurgency. But that, in fact, is what's happened. Are there instances in which there's a level of almost futility in reconstructing in the middle of a war zone, knowing that insurgents are going to target some of the reconstruction efforts?
Perhaps with some projects there has been a frustration. The Northern Pipeline that I've talked about several times is one of those. But also let me say that Iraq has 18 provinces. It's really, the insurgency is concentrated in four. There are large sections of the country that are relatively peaceful and where reconstruction has progressed unimpeded. But at the same time, there is danger, the threat of danger everywhere, and that pushes costs up and leads to delays.
Stuart Bowen, I want to thank you very much, and I wish you safe travels on your next trip to Iraq.
Terry, thank you. It's been a pleasure to be with you.
Stuart Bowen is the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction. His office released their seventh report to Congress earlier this week. You can find a link to that report on our website, freshair.npr.org.